Talley Gallery at Bemidji State University is hosting a new exhibit of work by Marley Call, looking back at his 60-year artistic journey with some never-before-seen works, on display through October 30th. Now it's time for a message from the Minnesota Department of Health. Sometimes you just need to talk about it, but it can be hard to find someone who really listens. That's why there is 988, with support that meets you where you are. Confidential and staffed by trained folks who want to help when you need someone to talk to. Call or text 988 or chat online at 988lifeline.org. Today on the Thursday Morning Show, Malachi Coons is my co-host. We'll be talking fishing coming up about 6:20. Jeff Sundin will be our guest. If you want to weigh in, maybe you're catching some big perch like he has been on the boat lately. You can send a picture. Text us 218-326-1234. More news is coming up next. It's a minute after 6.
PR News in Washington. I'm Corva Coleman. The UN General Assembly continues its opening session today in New York. This morning, the head of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, will address diplomats. He'll do so by video connection. The Trump administration has refused to grant him a visa to enter the country. The U.S. has drafted a new proposal for ending the war in Gaza. President Trump is expected to publicly release the plan soon, as NPR's Daniel Estrin reports from Tel Aviv.
President Trump met this week with Arab leaders in New York and presented them with a new 21-point plan for ending the Gaza war. Trump's envoy Steve Witkoff spoke about it at a conference Wednesday.
I think it addresses Israeli concerns and as well the concerns of all the neighbors in the region. And we're hopeful and I might say even confident that in the coming days, we'll be able to announce some sort of breakthrough.
In a statement, Arab leaders said they'd cooperate with Trump's efforts. Trump will meet Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu early next week. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
President Trump welcomes Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to the White House today. Trump says they'll talk about a deal to sell U.S. fighter jets to Turkey. Drug makers and foundations are teaming up to make a new HIV prevention drug affordable. Two separate deals have been announced on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly. NPR's Gabriela Emanuel reports from New York.
Lenacapavir is the name of the new medication that's been hailed as a game changer. Two injections a year provide almost complete protection against contracting HIV. But a big question is cost. Now the Clinton Global Health Initiative, the Gates Foundation, and UnitAid are teaming up with Indian manufacturers to develop a generic version. The cost they project of $40 a year is on par with the oral HIV prevention drug that's currently available. Gabriela Emanuel, NPR News, New York.
The Gates Foundation is also a financial supporter of NPR. Investigators are seeking a motive for the deadly shooting outside an Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility yesterday in Dallas. One person was killed, two others were injured. The gunman took his own life. NPR's Sergio Martinez Beltran reports.
The Department of Homeland Security says all of the victims were ICE detainees. Mayra, a Nicaraguan immigrant who was inside the facility when the shooting happened, says it was terrifying. There were like 20 shots, Mayra says. She froze and got scared for her daughter who was waiting for her outside. She asked NPR not to use her last name because of her pending immigration case. The alleged shooter was found dead. Their identity has not been revealed, but officials say it was a targeted act of violence. The FBI says shell casings with anti-ICE messages were found by the suspect's body. Sergio Martinez Beltran, NPR News, Dallas.
You're listening to NPR. A government shutdown is looming. It will happen next week unless Democrats and Republicans can agree on a federal spending deal. President Trump called off a meeting with Democratic leaders yesterday. Now the White House says that if there is a shutdown, it won't just temporarily furlough federal workers, it will lay them off. The U.S. Postal Service says it's going to hold off on increasing the price of a U.S. stamp until at least the middle of next year. As NPR's Hansi Lo Wang reports, this announcement comes after a price hike this past summer.
The price of a first-class forever stamp has gone up 7 times over the past 4 years. But the U.S. Postal Service, which is a financial support of NPR, says that until at least mid-2026, it's staying at 78 cents. That's among the world's lowest prices for mailing a letter domestically. But compared to decades ago, fewer people and businesses are using first-class mail to send bills, payments, and advertising. And that's destabilizing the U.S. Postal Service, which generally receives no tax dollars to keep it running. USPS relies instead on selling stamps and other service fees. The Postal Regulatory Commission recently approved temporary price hikes of close to 6% for certain USPS shipping services starting next month. Like those put in place by FedEx and UPS, those increases are set to last through the year-end holiday season. Anzi Luong, NPR News.
Tropical storm Umberto has formed in the Atlantic Ocean. The National Hurricane Center says it's about 500 miles off some of the Caribbean islands. But forecasters are warning Umberto is going to gain strength and speed over the weekend. It could turn into a major hurricane by early next week. On Wall Street, Dow futures are flat. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Legacy Box, committed to saving aging tapes and photos by bringing them to life in digital form, then making them accessible in Legacy Box Cloud. Learn more at legacybox.com.
Pam Perry from Brainerd is a regular contributor to the KAXE Morning Show. She talks about birds and other wildlife. We asked her why she supports this station.
So, and now the most recent thing is the newsroom. And I love the news reports. You're not hearing that anywhere else. You're not hearing about what county boards are doing and local governments. This is the place. This is where you're going to hear about it. And the music was wonderful. You know, and you had your volunteer hosts. And again, local people often. I want to support it. I want to support something. And then, of course, when I was listening, I was going, where else do you hear about bud break and plants and birds and forestry and all the things that, you know, we're Northern Minnesota.
You can become a member like Pam Perry. Give now at KAXE.org.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Martinez in Los Angeles, California. Coming up, we hear from former Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security, Juliette Kayyem, about what's fact and what's rhetoric following the shooting at an Immigration and Customs Enforcement office in Dallas, Texas.
First, at least one immigration detainee is dead, and two are in critical condition after that shooting. It is at least the third instance of gun violence in immigration facilities in Texas this year. Different incidents, different backstories, but ICE is in the news as the Trump administration tries for a mass deportation.
With us now is Toluwani Osibamuwo of member station KERA in Dallas. So we mentioned some details about the shooting, but how far have authorities gotten in their investigation so far?
Yeah, well, yesterday was a pretty chaotic and tragic day in one of the busiest immigration facilities in North Texas. And we still have a lot of questions today. Aside from the victims, the suspect is also dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Dallas police said the person shot at the ICE office from a nearby building. The FBI says they're investigating the shooting as a, quote, act of targeted violence. Joe Rothrock with the Dallas FBI office says local and federal authorities will be participating in the investigation.
There will be no resource not utilized to bring all those individuals who are responsible, to bring them to justice and to hold them accountable.
FBI Director Kash Patel called this a despicable, politically motivated attack on law enforcement. Authorities haven't indicated any specific motive, but they did release a picture of 5 unspent bullet casings found at the scene, and one had the words anti-ICE.
Okay, now we've also seen a name and a picture floating around about the shooter. Anything confirmed on that? Tell us what we do know about that shooter.
Well, acting ICE Director Todd Lyons identified the shooter to CBS News as Joshua John. NPR found that John most recently lived in Fairview, which is a suburb about 30 miles north of Dallas, and police had swarmed his home there yesterday afternoon. And one of his neighbors, Sherry Davis, said it was a very small, tight-knit community, but she didn't know much about John.
I would have never imagined that such a thing, you know, someone that felt so disenfranchised would live so close to me.
Collin County court records don't show that John has a history of any violent crimes. However, he was arrested and pleaded guilty to marijuana charges in 2016. Authorities haven't released the identities of the victims. One of them who's in the hospital is a Mexican national. That's according to the Mexican Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Okay. Now, as we mentioned earlier, I mean, this is just the most recent attack on an immigration facility in Texas. What can you tell us about the other incidents that have led up to this moment?
Well, on July 4th, a gunman shot at a local police officer during a protest outside an ICE facility in Alvarado. That's about 30 miles south of Fort Worth. 17 people have been arrested. And then 3 days after that shooting, a man opened fire at a Customs and Border Protection facility in McAllen, a border city along the Rio Grande. He was killed by law enforcement. And then in late August, the Dallas ICE office that was the site of yesterday's shooting got a bomb threat where a man at the entrance of the building claimed to have an explosive in his bag. Immigration and immigrants have been at the center of the political divide, often portrayed in a negative light. And yesterday, some immigrants became victims of this political rhetoric.
Tolawani Osibamowo is a reporter with KERA in Dallas. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
In a social media post, the president blamed the shooting on what he called, quote, deranged radical leftists and the rhetoric of, quote, radical left Democrats. So far as we know today, one person committed the shooting, but we do live in a moment of passionate feelings and rhetoric and many other influences, so how do we think about them? Juliette Kayyem has thought about this a lot. She is a former Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security in the Obama administration, is now at Harvard. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
I guess we got to note it's early. Even what we think we know about the suspect may look different tomorrow, but what do you see that is meaningful?
Well, and then the most important thing is at least what's been disclosed by the FBI director is that one of the casings that he was using had the words anti-ICE. So you're going to begin with that. And it's very similar to recent killings that we've seen, both in Charlie Kirk and this United Health CEO killing, in which these men are using these casings and writing on them. John is a drifter. He's 29 years old, doesn't seem to have held a job, has this previous marijuana conviction, seemed to live, at least by early reporting, in the world of gaming to a significant extent, and no real political ties, didn't seem to have a strong political identity. This is coming from early reporting again, but then woke up and shot at an ICE facility. I have to say, just what we know now, clearly had planned this shooting. He seemed to know where to target and was in an elevated position.
Is this a thing that happens a lot? Someone who doesn't seem all that political pulls a political cause seemingly out of the air or off the internet?
It is. I mean, these guys are living in a culture that, like, most people are not experiencing. As you know, it's sites like Halo and Steam. One report had John sort of logging 10,000 hours of gaming, and it's a world that's like it doesn't really exist in our world. There's sort of pretend atmospheres and people and animals, and their extreme irony, extreme internet subcultures with memes. Our brains literally cannot process it. What we're seeing now, at least with the Charlie Kirk murder and this one so far, is these guys are very steeped in this. In terms of radicalization, we really are just beginning to learn what's going on. The ties that the Trump administration are making between this killing and a radical left or the Democratic Party are just not there. You know, we think of radicalization as, you know, you have a terrorist leader says who you say, you know, go kill someone, and they do that, right? So that's one type of way of thinking about it. Another way is what's called sort of stochastic radicalization, which Trump's critics have used in the past, which is he elevates sort of violence and then people go out and follow him. What we're seeing now is people who seem to be turning to violence without a leader, without any clear identity or ties to a group. And that radicalization process is unique and is scary because we don't really know how to stop it.
Well, with that as the background, then, we have officials talking about dangerous rhetoric or rhetoric that they view as false and dangerous. How should we think about which rhetoric, political rhetoric, is dangerous?
Well, there's no question that the rhetoric, and this I will be both sides on, we would benefit as a nation of toning it down. But what we shouldn't view, what we shouldn't do is silence the important debates that we're having in a democracy about clearly contentious and controversial issues. The White House loops in a killer with a movement with criticism of the White House all in one fell swoop. And that's what Trump does with his language. He says sort of an agenda. Well, what's an agenda? Agenda is someone like me who opposes ICE's actions right now. That's very different than focusing on the violence and the violence when it targets ICE, when it targets a right-wing leader, or when it targets the left or a left-wing leader. And in that, we can be consistent in condemning violence regardless of the motive.
Is there a difference between rhetoric that attacks a policy and rhetoric that attacks a person?
There is. If someone says, this person, let's just say the president of the United States, is very bad and we should kill him, that would strike me, at least in parts, depending on where you're saying and who you're saying it to, as dangerous. But on the other hand, saying, I don't like what ICE is doing and it feels autocratic and lawless, that is legitimate criticism of a very controversial policy by the Trump administration.
Juliet Kayyem, formerly with the Department of Homeland Security, now with Harvard. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
It has been nearly 8 months since a deadly mid-air collision of a passenger jet and an Army helicopter in the skies near Washington, D.C. Now, the widow of one passenger on that plane has filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the airline and the federal government. NPR's Joel Rose reports it's the first of what will likely be dozens of lawsuits.
Casey Crafton was one of 60 passengers who died in the mid-air collision. Yesterday, his wife became the first family member to file a lawsuit.
Our lives were shattered in a moment, and the grief has been unimaginable.
Casey's brother, Daley Crafton, read a statement written by Casey's wife, Rachel, at a press conference in Washington.
Casey was a devoted father and husband, and we built a beautiful life together. The future we dreamed about was taken away from us.
The federal lawsuit names American Airlines as well as PSA Airlines, the regional carrier that operated the flight, as defendants, along with the federal government. 67 people, including the crew of the helicopter and the regional jet, died in the collision near Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport, making it the deadliest air traffic disaster in the U.S. in decades. A federal investigation by the National Transportation Safety Board has revealed problems with the altimeter in the Army helicopter, which was flying higher than it should have been, along with serious concerns about many near misses at the airport that predated the collision. Lawyers for the plaintiff argue the airline deserves some of the blame as well.
The crash of American Eagle 5342 was predictable, it was preventable, and caused the needless loss of 67 lives.
That's Robert Clifford, a lawyer representing the Crafton family. He argues that American Airlines did not adequately train its crew on how to safely navigate congestion around the airport. American pushed back. In a statement, the airline said it has a strong track record of putting safety above everything else, and that it would fight any claim that the airline, quote, caused or contributed to this accident. Several dozen family members of other crash victims also attended the press conference, including Doug Lane, who lost his wife and son in the collision.
Many of us have been asked whether we dread the idea of rehashing the worst days of our lives in court. And we are here to see this process through, however long it takes, to ensure that our family members have a lasting legacy that makes the world safer for everyone who flies.
For now, those other family members were there to show their support, but they're all expected to file lawsuits of their own. Joel Rose, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR News.
Good morning. It's 6:19. You're tuned in to KAXE, people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. We bring you national news and local news. You can't get much more local than a fishing report. I'm Heidi Holton. Coming up, it's our early bird fishing guide, Jeff Sundin. Make sure you stay tuned. You would think he's talking about fall fishing patterns, but with the weather we've had, might be a little bit different out there. So stay tuned. Sunny skies today with highs 73 to 80. Breezy south winds 5 to 15, gusting up to 20. Clear skies overnight with lows 44 to 49 and northwest winds 5 to 10. Tomorrow Friday looks like sunny with temperatures in the low to mid 70s. Southeast winds from 5 to 10, gusting up to 15. Overnight temperatures tomorrow 50 to 55. And looking ahead to Saturday, sunny with highs in the upper 60s to low 70s.
Gone fishing. There's a sign up on your door.
Pops, don't blab it around, will you?
Gone fishing.
Keep it shady. I got me a big one staked out.
You ain't working anymore.
I don't have to work. I got me a piece of Gary.
Cows need milking in the barn.
I have the twins on that detail. Each take a side.
But you just don't give a darn.
Getting 4 bits of cow and hand lotion.
You just never seem to learn.
Man, you taught me.
You ain't got no ambition.
You're convincing me.
Gone fishing. Got your hound dog by your side.
That's old Cindy Lou going with me.
Gone fishing. Fleas are biting at his hide.
Get away from me, boys. You're bothering me. Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross, we gone fishing. Instead of just a wishing,
bumpo, baby, bumpo, bumpo, bumpo,
oh, yeah.
It's Thursday morning. It is 6:21. That means it's time to talk fishing with Jeff Sundin, our early bird fishing guide. All this week, Jeff, we've been asking folks about their favorite places to witness fall going on. So do we have fall out on the lake as well?
I thought we did for a little bit.
Okay.
There was, in fact, you know, the people that I'm fishing with right now were commenting on the, they didn't think the colors were as good as they usually are when they were up here. Mm-hmm. And I've been kind of watching it for the last few days. I see some leaves that are starting to trickle down. I'm beginning to wonder if the peak, I mean, kind of like when the hardwoods got as pretty as they were ever going to be, feels like it might have happened in some areas already, and now we're kind of waiting for the aspens and all those trees to turn yellow, and we'll get a little rebound in color, but it seems a little bit past prime on some of them.
Okay.
I think it matters a little bit where you go to, because I've noticed that there are certain places driving through the woods, for example, on the way to a lake, I'll see better color than I will when we get there. Like maybe the temperature difference around the water changes the perspective or something like that. So far, anyway, I'm having a little trouble seeing where it's really that beautiful kind of, oh, this is such a nice place to sit type of scenery. But, and then we got this other thing going on where the water temperature is going up and the sun is beating down on you from the above, and there's not a breeze on the lake, and you come home thinking about nothing more than taking a shower. It's been kind of, you know, it's like, been sort of a interesting reversion back into summer again after we had that nice taste of fall, and it kind of made everything feel like fall was coming.
So does that do something back to the fish too, and how they're moving on the lakes?
Yeah, it really has for me. The last week I was kind of reporting, you know, everything moving in the direction of all these fall patterns. The panfish were moving out into deeper water, and the walleyes were on the mid-lake bars on Winnie, and so on and so forth. And then I think about Sunday of this week, I started noticing that those patterns were beginning to fall apart. Instead of seeing schools of crappies out in the open water, I was just starting to see ones and twos And instead of being able to find like a little, maybe three or four or a half a dozen walleyes on a point in, let's just say 20, 22 feet of water, it was starting to be just one fish here and one fish there. And then finally it culminated a couple of days ago where all of the fall, everything that I had in my brain about fall on Tuesday just sort of fell apart. They had really, I would say, probably one of the tougher days that I've had, you know, grinding around on Winnie trying to get, and now I don't mean that we got bombed out and never caught anything. We did. We caught a few fish, pick up one here, one there, but I could really see where the peak was a long ways off. Now we're kind of back to that summer grind where if the water temperature goes up, the sun comes out, and the wind stops blowing, it gets to be just a little bit of work. So towards the end of the day on that day, I was getting the bright idea to just forget about fall and start thinking about maybe this is just like midsummer. So we're looking for panfish at the end of the day on cutfoot. And instead of looking anywhere around open water, we just went back up into the shallow weeds and started casting small jigs. Like a 16th ounce jig with had a variety of plastic tails, a paddle tail or a twirl tail, any of the little crawly and feely things that look like they might attract panfish. If it looks good to you, it probably will work. And we started casting those into 5 to 7 feet of water right up around the weeds. And there was a little flurry of activity to end our day. There was crappies, some sunfish. The perch that we caught were kind of on the small side, but I suspect if we would have thrown those same lures into an area where there were a few larger perch, we would have caught those too. And then yesterday I sort of planned my entire day around that last couple of hours on Winnie and Cutfoot from Tuesday. What happens if we just skip over every thought about having it be fall and just revert back to summertime presentations? So I picked a lake where the water usually had a pea soup green on the top, lots of weeds, a lot of things, the kind of fishing report that you would get if we were talking in the middle of July. Anyway, we got to the lake. It was green like I was hoping. The algae was kind of thick on the surface. We moved out, and the water temperature was 69. It would turn out to be 70 before we were done with the day. And I could find some weeds in 6 or 7 feet of water. Now, I hadn't been on this lake for 2 months, so I was expecting that it was going to be a little bit of a search, you know, run around and kind of figure out where they were, and then maybe we would start catching a few fish. But no. As soon as we got into 6 or 7 feet of water, we started trolling spinners, and I think it took about 2 minutes before Karen caught a nice big fat crappie, and then Kyle caught a northern, and then there was a couple of perch, and then there was another crappie, and then there was a walleye. And so from the beginning of the day until the end of the day, pretty much every spot we went to, some places had more fish than others, but every place had something. And now I'm pretty lucky because these two, they like to catch northerns and they like to harvest them. So part of the reason that I picked the lake is because it's known for having a lot of northerns and then a smattering of other fish. So that happened to work out. In fact, I was sort of rushing out the door yesterday morning, and I told Susan that if I was lucky, we would maybe pick up a couple of walleyes just to take some of the pressure off. I have the same people today. They fish for 4 days, and they like to get a little bit of everything. And so I hate getting to the last day and being sort of on the search for something that we haven't caught yet. And I thought maybe we would catch just a couple of walleyes so that I wouldn't be going into the day thinking that I had to try and get a whole bunch of them. And it actually turned out that in the midst of all the pike and other fish that we picked up seven walleyes yesterday. So now they're tagged out on those too. So today we're just going to wind up having a kind of a fun day and go look for some sunfish maybe, or catch and release some bass, whatever I can figure out how to stumble into on this day. So if you're thinking about heading towards the lake this weekend and you've been following reports, including mine, that have been kind of leading you down the trail of this fall feeding pattern, as long as weather stays warm now, especially if it's sunny and not too breezy, might be a good idea to dust off some of the tricks and techniques that you were using a couple months ago and give them another try, or if you haven't been fishing that much, a little refresher. You know that all the fishing reports on the website are archived, so you can go back and read basically anything you want to read for about the last 20 years. You can just follow all the July reports, for example, or August or September, and so use that as a little index and maybe get a few ideas about things that might work while this summer pattern is going on. And I should say, too, we've talked about this before, Heidi, the false start. We get a cold snap in the fall, and that triggers a little flurry of action. And then we've talked about this pretty often, where you get this mid, this little warm-up and the lull. The action sort of fades back out again. And now we should really be optimistic, because the next time a cold snap comes in, that will be the event that triggers the real, from then on, it'll be the fall. Now, there will be the odd zinger day will come along where things just don't work out right. But for the most part, the fish want to bite right now. This is the time of year where they really feed heavily, and there's a lot of food in the lake, and they're going to be active. So any little excuse now that triggers that run, a lot of the things, what I would suggest is follow some of the reports from a couple weeks ago, and then as we go into this next little cold snap, dust goes off and get ready for that early part of the fall. And then from then on until we hit the turnover, things should be pretty good most of the time.
So you said the water temperature has gone up. I haven't been swimming in a lake for a little over a week. Do you think I could again?
Well, we had, at the end of the day yesterday, we had 70.
Okay.
Now, some people say 70 is not good, and some people do. I've seen this lake that we were on yesterday would have been, the temperature would have been nice, but nobody would have enjoyed swimming in the green water. So, as I would guess, we're going to find out today. I'm going to be fishing on a lake that's a little more clear, and we'll see what the water temperature is there. I would say if you wanted to swim, you probably could,
okay,
providing that you don't mind a little cool temperature.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit. You've been focusing in on northerns and kind of studying up on that, because you've been talking to some of the folks from the DNRs. You have been writing some information up about it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I'm going through a transition in my thinking as I do this, because I started on the project about a month ago, and I was kind of leaning in the direction of thinking that the slot limit, the 22 to 26 inch northern pike slot limit that we've got, I was thinking that that was a little bit off, that maybe they didn't have the size just quite right. And then in the process, one of the DNR fisheries biologists that I interviewed, I had asked whether or not, you know, in an ideal scenario, what would be the regulation that would do the best job of bringing about some larger pike. And he said that the slot that we have now, in his opinion, was the best. And so, okay, I'm kind of working this through and keeping it on the back burner for a while as I learn more from others. But in the last couple of weeks, I've been lucky to just have more people that were interested in pike. So I've been doing above average amount of northern pike fishing. And I have to say that I'm seeing a lot more fish now that are starting to pop up over the top of that 26-inch threshold. Winnie, for example, in the recent maybe week or 10 days, we've been catching a greater number of 27, 26, 28, not monster-sized pike, but nicer ones. And so some of those fish are moving out of the slot and reaching those higher size thresholds. And in some of the smaller lakes, even the lake I was on yesterday, historically is not known for large pike, but it's known for having lots of numbers of them. And even there, we were getting a pretty good number of fish that were in the middle of the slot, like 24 inches. And while those aren't harvestable, it's a lot more fun to catch those than it is to catch the little skinny ones. So that all by itself, that's better news and maybe a little different than I was expecting to see. So anyway, kind of a heads up, I'm working on this thing and I don't want to rush it and have just it. I don't want it to be some kind of a little opinion thing. So with some help from friends at the DNR, there will be a good update after kind of the ending of my fall busy run. Things are kind of hectic right now. And once I get to the end of that, it'll give me some time to polish this thing off. So a few more weeks and watch for a decent update on Northern Pike.
Let's get back to Winnie. You've been seeing cormorants there. What do you think?
I think it looks like a situation. I'm holding back. Sometimes when you put videos up, it just triggers a whole bunch of things that really aren't right. But I did take a video a couple days ago of a really large flock of cormorants. And I can see folks that fish cutfoot from time to time are familiar with the area on Battle Point. There's always been maybe a quarter of a mile stretch of trees where the cormorants roost. And for a long time, I already know I had inquired about this in the past with fisheries folks from the Grand Rapids office, and they weren't overly concerned about it. But I can see now that that quarter of a mile stretch has turned into like a three quarters of a mile stretch. And the area that they were roosting before, I'm going to call it on the east side of Sealy Point. Now I see that there's a new stretch that's starting up on the west side of Sealy Point. And it's very easy to tell because the trees along that stretch are completely white because of the cormorants sitting on the tops of the trees, and then their droppings are landing on the leaves on both sides. So it looks like kind of a flocked, white flocked Christmas tree as you're looking at it. And then going out into the lake, the area between the Gap and Three Sisters, folks that fish Winnie will be familiar with that, there's what I would call an enormous amount of birds out there. And we know from past history on Leech Lake, the cormorants, each bird is eating about a pound, give or take, about a pound of fish every day. They don't discriminate. So it, like, don't jump to the conclusion that that means, you know, 20,000 pounds of walleyes, because they're eating rock bass and bullheads and whatever they can get their hands on, so to speak. It's something to look into, and folks that are listening are going to know maybe more about this, because I know on Leech Lake there was some intervention. It was a multifaceted project to do some control over there. And I think maybe it's time that we should, if not do something about it, at least start asking some questions, you know, get some assurances, you know, if anything should be done, how would we go about that, and so on and so forth. It's concerning to me.
Jeff, we're almost out of time, but you've got some news coming out of the Minnesota Fishing Hall of Fame. What's happening?
Well, tomorrow is the induction ceremony, and I'm going to be heading over there to introduce one of the newest inductees into the Hall of Fame right here in Grand Rapids. Ray's Marine is being inducted, and they deserve it. It's been they've been on quite a march over the last 40 years to become what is the largest Lund boat dealership in the world, in case folks didn't know that. And so they're going to be inducted tomorrow. And just a word of congratulations to them. And maybe I'll share a little bit of a story after the ceremony tomorrow night. But we'll be on hand for that.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jeff. You can read Jeff's fishing reports at jeffsunden.com. We'll check in next week.
Have a fabulous day.
You too. Bye-bye. Jeff himself is part of the Minnesota Fishing Hall of Fame. He's won those honors as well. That is located, I believe, in Little Falls, and you can visit it.
Good to know.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but I did on the Cormorants talk. We were just saying I had come up from the cities this past weekend driving along Mille Lacs, and I saw a whole bunch of cormorants in a little rocky outcropping along the shore as well, too. So, and I hadn't noticed them ever before driving along that stretch, but yeah, didn't know they had this relationship with the fishing industry as well. I've always just thought of them as kind of a bird that stretches its arm out and has an interesting look to it. But
that's Malachi Coons. I'm Heidi Holton. It's Thursday morning. He's sitting in for Kari Hedlund, and we've got a lot ahead for you this morning. It's kind of an exciting time of year. There's just stuff going on outside.
I know, and things are just,
changing and different sounds, and, you know, it's just, really fun to witness. So if you haven't taken the time, take a walk, you know, take a look around. Notice, Jeff was saying he thinks we maybe already are past peak. You're sounding a little, you know,
wow,
on the negative side, but I've got hope for more. But he's out on lakes, you know, where he's normally seeing it. He's got a better frame of reference than I do.
Yeah, I am very much hoping that I can hit it this weekend, as I'm hoping to go camping this weekend. But
nice.
I've been using the Minnesota DNR website, and they seem to say we've got a little bit of time.
Right.
But I guess, you know, whose favorite colors are, it seems like sort of an abstract study.
Yeah, yes, that's true.
But, hey, you know, I think there is still some bright colors to come. But
I do, too.
But we shall see.
Yeah. I am going to look right now, you know, in my favorite things. 1,759,700 birds crossed over Itasca County last night.
Okay.
That's the migration report from BirdCast. So they do it with
BirdCast
radar.
BirdCast is awesome.
Yeah, they do it with radar. They don't tell you exactly what they're seeing, but they have ideas of what probably is going by.
So, cormorants? Probably not.
No cormorants.
That seems like a lot of cormorants.
Yeah, we're looking at things like a lot of the warblers, yellow-rumped warblers, white-throated sparrow, ring-necked ducks, northern flicker. We've been having some flickers at our
house. Yes. Yesterday when I came into work, I saw a whole, on a little boulevard, a bunch of them kind of underneath some trees. So.
And eastern phoebe as well. So check it out. Do a search for BirdCast, and you enter in your county, and you can find out how many birds are migrating overhead as you sleep overnight, as you hopefully sleep. I did not sleep well last night. I've been having some trouble. I don't know if it's because I didn't have to have a schedule while I was off.
Yes, but and so the return to...
I was curious. Are you a good sleeper, Malachi? I've never... It might be too personal to ask that of you, but...
No, I am a pretty good sleeper. When I go to sleep, I usually can sleep pretty well. Sometimes my sleeping trouble is if I'm not dead tired, I can't get myself to go to sleep. You know, like... If I have to be up at 4 in the morning for some reason the next morning and at 10, whatever PM, I'm not feeling tired. Like I cannot get to bed in those situations.
Yeah.
Even when I know if I want a full 8 hours of sleep, I need to go to bed. But usually once I go to bed, I sleep like a rock.
Okay.
So good. I have my strengths and weaknesses as do we all, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Gotta work on it. One time I asked Andrew Dusingle on a Wednesday
He seems like a good
morning.
Sleeper.
No.
Oh.
I mean, I think he is, but he stays up too late, especially before a morning show. And I do that too. Like I get like this thing, like I plan to go to bed early in the evening and then like something clicks over. Like I don't want to stop doing whatever I'm doing. So I remember asking him like, why do we do this to ourselves? What do you think the reason is? And his answer is like, he said, because the man wins.
I agree.
And I was like, that is it. That is, it's something to do with like, growing up and having a bedtime, and then once you become an adult and you get to choose your bedtime, you still sort of have that thing of like, I'm cheating, I'm staying up late.
Yeah.
So
I agree with Andrew. And you know, we've got 24 hours I love coming to work here at KXC, but, you know, work is 8 hours of the day. Sleep is hopefully around 8 hours a day. So
yeah.
When you go home from work and you just, it's like, that's your time.
I know.
And so you want to stretch it out, and then you just, it's just a perpetuating cycle of.
I know.
And it's harder to do the things you have to do the next day. But
and you
I
know,
agree.
The catch up never works. Catch I always up. Think I'm going to go home and take a little
really?
Nap, and then, you know, the naps feel great, but then that does, it affects the next night's sleep.
Yeah. I take back. I think I am good at sleeping because I'm good at catching up. Maybe once every 3 weeks, I will go home after work and sleep for about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't really affect my sleep overall.
Yeah.
But I seem to catch up on weeks of not enough sleep by taking one really long nap and then getting back after it. So is that a skill? If that's a sleeping skill.
I think it's a skill. What I'm working on right now is not freaking out if I can't sleep. Like I fall asleep, but then I wake up about the same time. I wake up at like a little before midnight.
Okay.
And I'm kind of pretty much awake. And I'm like, well, now what? And so I try not to. I remember as a kid being very nervous if I woke up in the night and couldn't sleep, thinking, oh, my, this probably is not a surprise to you. I'd be worried about school the next day if I was too tired or whatever. And I would wake my mother up saying I was nervous.
Oh, nice.
She, you know, I'm sure she enjoyed that.
Yeah.
But she just told me, she goes, just do something. Don't worry about it. Like, you'll catch up later. Don't sit around laying in bed thinking, I can't sleep. So she goes, just read your book. Just do whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to at least
get up and do something.
Yeah.
I think that.
Yeah. Or pick up a book or something. Because it's the worst if you're laying there thinking, doing math. Oh my God, I'm only going to get this many hours of sleep. Yeah. And, you know,
I think that before getting back to the man and having to do things in like 8 hour shifts, you know, having to do this, go to work, do this.
Yeah.
I think people at different times in human history slept in two shifts.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I feel like I'm not a sleep doctor here, but I want to say I've read about this
play
or something.
On TV.
Yeah. But but like you sometimes get into deeper REM sleep, like the second time you sleep.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's uncommon to wake up in the night, but if you can't get back to bed, then obviously it is a problem. But
sure.
You know, sometimes I just get up and go get a drink and go back into bed, and that like resets me.
Yep.
Instead of laying there like floundering.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Anyways,
we'd love
sleep
to
tips with Malachi Coons.
There we go. We'd love.
I'm not qualified enough.
We'd love to hear from you, whether it's tips for sleeping, for getting to sleep, staying asleep, not worrying about it, or it's about fall colors. We heard from someone yesterday saying that their favorite place to see the fall colors is outside the window at Zorba's.
Yes.
So we'd love to hear from you. You can text us at 218-326-1234.
I was there, yeah.
Coming up, we'll have National Native News. Today, they're reporting on people in tribal communities who say that they're getting approached by predatory representation and solicitation in the wake of the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act being revived by Congress this summer. Stay tuned for that report.
Okay. Yeah, we receive support from Dragonfly Coffee, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery and offering espresso, bubble tea, and more. Empowering inclusion and community through employment, special orders available, and more at drinkdragonfly.com.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. On Tuesday, we reported about how people in tribal communities say they're getting approached by predatory representation and solicitation in the wake of the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, or RECA, being revived by Congress this summer. That story from KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio continues.
With the tribal fair season in full swing, solicitors are even targeting elders there, like 64-year-old Maggie Billyman in rural western New Mexico.
It's overwhelming. Who do you trust? Who do you go to?
At her home in northeastern Arizona, she says many Navajos, like herself, struggle with all sorts of cancers. Billyman lives with COPD and chronic renal failure or kidney disease. The daughter of a late uranium miner and Navajo code talker, Billyman recalls being asked to sign up with a national home health care company at the Eastern Navajo Fair in Crown Point. But that happened in July, a month before the DOJ reopened the free process.
And she looked at me real surprised, and she goes, we can get your record for you if you like, pull it out. And I said, oh my God, I got up out of the chair.
That fare booth was run by UEW, or United Energy Workers Healthcare, which paid $9 million in 2023 to settle allegations of submitting false claims to the U.S. Department of Labor. Several requests from KJZZ to UEW went unanswered. They've been named among companies and attorneys in the West on a growing watch list curated by a working group led by the nonprofit Union of Concerned Scientists. Their advocacy has led New Mexico's attorney general to warn consumers to watch out for fraud. Cancer survivor Tina Cordova is sounding the alarm, too.
It's pervasive. The scale is unprecedented.
Co-founder of the nonprofit Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium, she and others cite as an example downwinders.com, a web domain trademarked by the Florida Incorporated National Cancer Benefits Center, which also owns another company called Atomic Veterans.
They've made people believe that they're working with us.
National Cancer Benefits Center CEO Kirk Gladwin denies the allegations, stressing his company is part of the solution.
We do not solicit. We do not knock on doors. We do not call anybody ever. And we never have unless those people ask us for information. Don't let anybody tell you that because that's bullshit. And I hate to say that, but that I'll draw the line. That makes me angry because that's not us.
Those affected can still find free assistance from a handful of federally funded health clinics through RECEP, the Radiation Exposure Screening and Education Program.
The scams were new to me.
Candace Lewis is Dene and the RECEP patient navigator at North Country Healthcare in Flagstaff. It's one of only two such clinics in Arizona, and she's getting calls from all over.
I actually got off the phone earlier today with someone who was from New Mexico, and he shared a little bit of what he was going through. It was a hard call. They didn't even state their name.
That's supposed to be her job, so it upsets her.
Lawyers have more power and more pull than me. And it has been a little overwhelming at times, but I'm just like, bear with me. Just be patient with us.
Because if someone lawyers up, Lewis says her clinic can no longer help them with filing a RICA claim before the end of 2027. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
The Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa and the state of Wisconsin recently celebrated new dual language road signs. The new signs identify the tribe's boundaries and two river crossings in Ojibwe, Mohan, and English. The Bad River Band is the eighth of 12 tribes in the state to collaborate on such highway signs. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding in part by the Annenberg Foundation and the Ford Foundation. It's Thursday morning. I'm Heidi Holton sitting in for Kari. It's Malachi Coons. Malachi, thanks for being here with me.
Yeah, it is good to be here. Good to get up bright and early and see the light come into the world that I normally miss am trying to be sleeping.
I think it was Venus low in the skies I drove in today.
I did not notice.
The stars were great and there was a large, it was a planet for sure. And I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I was not paying attention. I don't quite have my lights on my bike set up. So normally I don't get up in the morning, so it doesn't really matter. But today I was sort of like, oh, geez, it's pitch black. I should have lights on my bike.
Yeah.
And so then I kind of went on the sidewalk and I wasn't really paying attention to the celestial bodies above. But good to know, tomorrow morning I'll keep an eye out for Venus as I am waking up in the morning. We received support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji. Offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Learn more online at hottubsmn.com.
Here's what we're expecting today. Sunny skies, highs 73 to 80 around our region with breezy south winds 5 to 15, gusting up to 20. Clear skies overnight with lows 44 to 49. And sunny tomorrow, temperatures in the low to mid 70s. Overnight temperatures 50 to 55. And by Saturday, sunny with highs in the upper 60s to low 70s. Jeff was saying that with these warmer temperatures, it's actually been really hot out fishing with the sun coming down on him.
Yeah, you know? I can imagine. The last few days, I've been trying to get outside after work. And yeah, yesterday I ended up wearing just shorts and stuff into work because the last few days, by the time the afternoon rolls around, I've been overheating and it's just full sun, blue skies. It's been gorgeous weather. It must not have got very cool last night because it was very pleasant on my way into work today. I see it's 59 degrees already in Grand Rapids. Must not have been too cold over the night. But yeah, we're seeing temperatures around upper 50s across the area, except for towards the range, 45 and hipping right now.
Coming up next, we're learning about some live music in our region.
This is The Set List on KAXC, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are looking at four shows this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, September 26th through the 28th in Bemidji and Grand Rapids. Starting things off with Brock Bolio at Bridget's Pub in Bemidji, Friday at 7 p.m. Bolio is a soulful singer and bluesy guitarist who mixes originals and covers, and he also plays guitar and bass with Corey Medina and Brothers. It's Brock Bolio this Friday at Bridget's in Bemidji. On to Saturday, it's Clocktoberfest all day at Clocko Brewing with three acts on the lineup. Kicking off the day will be Nathan Newman, a polka musician and accordion player from St. Cloud with a wide repertoire of German traditional music. After Newman, Lone Rock Bridge are playing, a six-piece alt-country band from the Twin Cities who released their debut album, Rosette, earlier this year. Wrapping up the evening will be Barn Dancing with Terrence Smith and the Old Time String Band. It's Clocktoberfest all day this Saturday at Clocko Brewing. Over at Rapids Brewing, rock and roll group Rich Matson and the North Stars are playing Saturday at 7. Tim Saxhog of Trampled by Turtles will be joining the long-running Iron Range band on bass. Their latest release was the single Not the Answer from earlier this year. Rich Matson and the North Stars at Rapids Brewing this Saturday. And on Sunday, acclaimed folk singer and one-man band Martin Sexton is also at Rapids Brewing. Sexton is on tour playing the music of Abbey Road and will be covering the final Beatles album in its entirety alongside his own original music. Martin Sexton this Sunday at Rapids Brewing. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and we'll post the latest edition every Wednesday at kaxc.org.
Coming up before our local news with the Up North Report, we've got some music picked out by our very own Malachi Coons over there. And then we've got kind of a day of news. We always bring you news on the morning show, sure, but we're really digging into local news. Thursdays, we check in with one of our reporters. We've got Larissa Donovan joining us at 7:45. Then at 8:10, a new guest to KEXC. He's a new reporter for MinPost for Greater Minnesota, and he's just worked on this really interesting article. Brian Arala, has written about rural food insecurity and grocery stores and how important they are to small towns. So we'll talk with him about that. And then our friend from the Star Tribune, Aaron Brown, he's going to be talking about U.S. Steel and the influence of the Trump administration on the Iron Range and jobs. We'll learn a lot more about it. If you have any questions along the way, you can send them in to us. You can text us at 218-326-1234.
Excuse me. I'm really looking forward to these check-ins as we have our news team here. There's so much going on, and it's more than any three people can cover. They are doing their best, but it's really cool to see all these different, I'm not getting up so early, all these different, there's sharing of stories. These people can use yours, and getting a little touch in on some different areas is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. You know, even if, especially with Brian, from MinPost, some of the places he went are not necessarily, you know, they're in northwestern Minnesota outside of our listening area. It's the kind of same as Friday mornings when we check in with Marshall from the Timberjay of like, we have a lot more in common than we do not in small towns. And so even if it's not a story about your town, something like that may be happening where you live. And I think the grocery stores, that's going to be really interesting to get into, because I think everyone has seen over the years the change in our small towns. He doesn't get into this, but I find it very interesting, dollar stores and how that affects small towns.
Yep, that is definitely, can always sometimes be a sign of there being, it's an option for people, but when they come in, I've seen also stuff about that is how it sort of sometimes means that other stores are not there when those come in. And I just have so many memories of going to the grocery store as a youngest kid, kind of being with my mom all the time. And and I had first heard of food deserts and things like that in context of a city. But it's really interesting to see this, as obviously rural places have the same issues. But, when I first moved to a bigger city, there's regions of the city that have no access to to good foods, but it's a thing that's, it's an issue that's everywhere. And yeah, looking forward to that conversation. Even the opening lines of his article are great. Yeah.
About the pickle wraps or the pickle wraps. Minnesota sushi, they call it.
Minnesota sushi, a classic. Yes, that is coming up. Plus, going to be a lot of fun to check in different areas of news and in-depth looks at things going on in our state.
What have you chosen for us today?
I picked this Anastasia album. It's her debut. It's called Tether, and it's just a beautiful morning record. If there's a, I'm doing air quotes here, like a Saturday morning record, it kind of has that vibe.
Take it. Take it back. All that you left within me.